And we'd like to turn to John chapter 5. I'm going to read the same verses that we read this morning, verses 1 through verse 15. After this, there was a feast of the Jews, and Jesus went up to Jerusalem. Now there is at Jerusalem by the sheep market a pool, which is called in the Hebrew tongue Bethesda, having five porches. In these lay a great multitude of impotent folk, of blind, halt, withered, waiting for the moving of the water. For an angel went down at a certain season into the pool and troubled the water. Whosoever then first, after the troubling of the water, stepped in was made whole of whatsoever disease he had. And a certain man was there which had an infirmity 38 years. When Jesus saw him lie and knew that he had been now a long time in that case, he saith unto him, Wilt thou be made whole? The impotent man answered him, Sir, I have no man when the water is troubled to put me into the pool. But while I am coming, another steppeth down before me. Jesus said unto him, Rise, take up thy bed, and walk. And immediately the man was made whole, and took up his bed and walked, and on the same day was the Sabbath. The Jews therefore said unto him that was cured, It is the Sabbath day, it is not lawful for thee to carry thy bed. He answered them, He that made me whole, the same said unto me, Take up thy bed and walk. Then asked they him, What man is that which saith unto thee, Take up thy bed and walk? And he that was healed wist not who it was, for Jesus had conveyed himself away, a multitude being in that place. Afterward Jesus findeth him in the temple, and said unto him, Behold, thou art made whole. Sin no more, lest the worse thing come unto thee. The man departed and told the Jews that it was Jesus which had made him whole. In these verses, we read of a pool called Bethesda. This pool had five porches, five covered places. At this pool, in these porches, there was a multitude. We see that in verse 3. In verse 5, we read, And a certain man was there. So our attention is directed to a particular individual in that multitude. As you read on, you see that Jesus would come to this multitude of people described in verse 3 to bring healing to the man who is described in verse 5. Notice verse 6. When Jesus saw him lie, so Jesus saw him, Jesus knew him, they had been now a long time in that case, he saith unto him, Jesus saw him, Jesus knew him, Jesus spoke to him. He's taking the initiative. The Lord took the initiative. And he asked him a question. Wilt thou be made whole? So amongst that multitude, it was a certain man that Jesus saw in a special way, Jesus knew in a special way, and Jesus spoke to in a special way, and Jesus healed. In this, we see Jesus choosing the sinner, Jesus caring for the sinner, Jesus coming to the sinner. It's all Jesus. We see this again is a beautiful picture of the salvation of a soul. However, one of the most amazing traits of Scripture is its variety of application. And in this message, we want to view this man, we want to view this incident, not as a picture of the saving of a soul. We want to see him as the sad condition that many of God's people can fall into. The central thought of the message will be the mindset of this man. And we've looked at this man's mindset in other messages. We want to speak tonight on the subject of beware of the mindset of Bethesda. And by mindset, we simply mean a way of thinking. We all have a way of thinking. We see the condition and the mindset of this particular man reveals to us a great danger. His condition reveals a great danger that we can fall into. His mindset reveals a great danger. And as we said this morning, again, this passage is meant to teach us. It's meant to preach to us. It's meant to convey to us spiritual lessons. And first of all, briefly, just consider the man's condition. Because his condition mirrors the condition of many of God's people. We are told in verse 5 that this man had an infirmity. That is, he had a malady. He had an ailment. He had a disease. There was a disorder in his life. There was an impairment in his life. And this went on for 38 years. So this infirmity that this man had was something that greatly impacted this man's life. It was something that greatly impacted the way he lived his life. And one's physical condition does have a tremendous impact upon one's lifestyle. That being said, we have to always be mindful that there is a disease far more serious, far more dreadful, far more consequential than any physical disease that exists among man. And that is spiritual disease. Spiritual disease. Far more serious. Now, most people are going to get far more upset if they are told tomorrow that they have a physical disease than if I were to tell you tonight that you have a spiritual disease. But let me tell you, any spiritual sickness is far worse than any physical sickness you'll ever get. And the consequences are far, far more reaching than any physical disease you might have. We are told in verse 7 that this man was impotent, meaning that due to his infirmity, he was powerless. He was unable. He was in a state of physical paralysis, a state of physical decay. And as bad as physical paralysis might be, there is such a thing as spiritual paralysis. As bad as physical debilitation and decay might be, there is such a thing as spiritual debilitation and decay. And it's far more serious, and it's far more consequential than any physical decline you and I might experience. Due to this man's condition, we're told in verse 6, that he was lying there. Jesus saw him lie there. What's he doing? He's just lying there. Just lying around. Why? His condition had rendered him ineffective. His condition had rendered him unproductive. We are also told in verse 6 that this man had now been a long time in that case. And how sad those words. Had now been there a long time in that case. Sadly, many of God's people find themselves in those words. They're in a sad, sad spiritual state. And they've been there for a long time. A lot longer than they ever thought they would be there. There was a time when God's people If one is here tonight and in poor spiritual health, there was a time when you began your spiritual decline. You didn't just wake up spiritually sick one day. There was a time when you began to decline spiritually. And now, a long time in that case. This man, like so many of God's people, was shackled by disease. Lived his life that way for 38 years. He was living a life of sorrow. Why? Because of his condition. He was living a life of misery and gloom. He was destitute. He was living a life of defeat and emptiness. A life of restlessness. Again, it mirrors the condition of many of God's people. Many of God's people live lives shackled. They're shackled by spiritual disease. They live lives of misery. They live lives of gloom. They're constantly restless. Their lives are empty. And it's all due to a spiritual condition. This man, like many, he was sick. He was sick. And there are individuals today who are physically healthy. Talking about God's people. But spiritually they're sick. They're spiritually diseased. And if you wake up tomorrow and you can't move your left hand or your right hand or your left arm or your right arm or one of your legs, you're going to get concerned. And you're going to go to the emergency room or you're going to call a doctor. You're going to do something. Because you're concerned. And yet people get spiritual disease, far more worse, far more consequential. And they're not concerned. Well, it'll pass. No, it won't. Before long, you'll be a long time in that case. Every time you begin a spiritual decline, always remember, unless this is reversed, I'll be a long time in this case. That's always true. Unless it's reversed, you're going to be a long time in a state of spiritual sickness. It's sad as you look at this multitude in John chapter 5. But it's even more sad looking at the multitude of those who are spiritually sick, spiritually diseased, spiritually paralyzed in heart and in mind. And therefore, just like this man, spiritually unable, there are people sitting here right now. If you had to pray, you couldn't. You're unable. Because you're sick. Because you're spiritually diseased. There are people who are spiritually unable. Spiritually impotent. Due to spiritual disease. There are those who are crippled. In a far worse way than being crippled physically. They are crippled by fear. They are crippled by worry. They are crippled by guilt from unconfessed and unforsaken sin. They are crippled with a spirit of bitterness. They are crippled with a spirit of unforgiveness. Crippled with a spirit of selfishness. Crippled with a spirit of pride. And unbelief. And because of these things, they are spiritually unable. That's sad. It's sad because it doesn't have to be that way. It's sad because if you're in that condition, you have chosen to stay in that condition. Because there's things you can do to get out. The result is their lives are spiritually dysfunctional. And sadly, they've now been a long time in that case. Again, if you're beginning to decline spiritually, you need to reverse course immediately. You need to reverse course as soon as it happens. Because if you don't, you may wake up one day and you've now been in that case a long time. And it's now like you can't get out of it. So this man's condition mirrors the condition of many of God's people. Also, we notice the companions of this man. He was part of that great multitude described in verse 3. I've noticed for years, people who don't have much to do with one another, all of a sudden, somebody gets spiritually sick and now they're starting to hang around those folks. That's a sure sign. That's a sure sign. It even happens in churches. There are people who don't say much to each other, but then eventually one of the others get backslidden and they kind of draw to that other backslidden person. He was part of that great multitude. He was in constant communication with those who belonged to this multitude. So he was in constant communication with those who were in the same or worse shape than himself. And that's sad. They, like him, were in a desperate state. They, like him, were shackled. They may not have been shackled in the exact same prison, but they're all shackled. And can you imagine their conversations? Can you imagine? As they conversed with each other, I imagine they shared their gloom, spread their stories, told their stories of pity, told how they've been disappointed in life, in the hopelessness that they feel. And what did they do? They simply pulled each other further into despair. They just pulled each other into unhealthy thinking. Beware of people that pull you further into the mud. Beware of those people. Again, we've said it many times, there are unsafe people in the world. Stay away from them. They won't do you any good. They'll pull you in the mud every chance they get because they don't want to be there by themselves. Beware of this multitude. Now let's look. We see this man's condition. It mirrors the condition, sadly, of many of God's people. Again, remember there in 3 John, I believe it is, there's a man named Gaius. And John wished that he would prosper physically as he prospered spiritually. In the case of most, if their physical health mirrored their spiritual health, oh, how pitiful. Oh, how pitiful it would be. But consider the mindset of this man, because his mindset also mirrors the mindset of many of God's people. Jesus asked him a question in verse 6. Wilt thou be made whole? It's a simple question. The man's response is recorded in verse 7. The impotent man answered him, Sir, I have no man when the water is troubled to put me into the pool. But while I am coming, another steppeth down before me. Looking at this man's response, you see that he never really answered the question. The question that Jesus asked required a yes or no answer. Wilt thou be made whole? You would think most people say, yeah, I would love to be whole. Wouldn't be too many, I wouldn't think, that would say, no, I don't want any part of it. But this man didn't answer the question. He gave a response. And just because someone gives a response doesn't mean they answer. And this man did not answer the question. But the man's response does reveal much. It reveals some further things about this man. It is very descriptive of his condition. It is very descriptive of the mindset of this man. And this man, again, his condition mirrors the condition of many of God's people. His mindset mirrors the mindset of many of God's people. The importance of the mind, the importance of the way we think, must never be underestimated. Peter, with good reason, wrote in 1 Peter 1 and verse 13, gird up the loins of your mind. He is saying, keep your mind right. Keep your mind from becoming carnal. Keep your mind from becoming corrupt. Keep your mind from becoming selfish and feeble. Keep your mind right. Keep it sound. Keep it pure. Do not allow your mind to drift into the thought patterns of the world. Do not allow your mind to become bitter. Because as a man thinketh in his heart, so is he. We read in Proverbs 23 in verse 7. If one does not keep their mind right, well, first of all, if you don't keep your heart right, your mind won't be right. If your mind isn't right, your heart isn't right, your emotions will not be right. Your actions will not be right. And there will be a missing of God's blessings, and you will fall into the snares of Satan. And before long, you'll be in that case a long time. So the mind is very important. Right thinking is essential. It's vital. It's vitally necessary. How one thinks has much to do with one's spirituality, and one's spirituality has everything to do with how one thinks. You cannot separate the two. We need to always beware of a wrong mindset. We don't have time tonight, but read 2 Corinthians 10, verse 5. Study that verse. Be sure of this. The enemy knows the significance and the importance of the mind. He knows it well. And he knows you have a wrong mind and you sit in church, don't bother him a bit. Because he knows you can't worship, you're rendered ineffective, you're impotent. If your mind's not right. So let's notice this man's mind. In his mind, he had become accustomed to his condition. Again, he had an infirmity, verse 5. He is referred to as the impotent man. He has been disabled by disease, and he's been this way for 38 years. Every moment, every day, every week, every month, for 38 years, this man has been in this condition. For 38 years, he had been crippled. 38 years unable to walk. 38 years unable to live the life of the healthy. This is true also of many spiritually. But there came a time, sometime in that 38-year span, there came a time in his life when he accepted it as the norm of his life. You say, how do you know that? Doesn't say that. That's true. You do anything for 38 years, there comes a time. You do anything long enough, there comes a time where it becomes normal. Whether it be good or whether it be bad. So in that time span of 38 years,
somewhere along the line,
he accepted it as the norm for him. That's true of those who are spiritually sick.
Somewhere along the line, you will begin to think,
this is the norm for me. That's bad thinking. That's very dangerous. We have to be careful what we accept as the norm of our life. You better be careful what you accept as normal in your life. You know, I hear all the time, well, they've been that way ever since I've known them. That's not a reason. Oh, they've always been that way. You just got to learn to live with it. Well, that's not a reason. But that's the sad state of human nature. We become accustomed to whatever it is that's going on if we're in it long enough. This man became accustomed to the life of a crippled. Be careful of what you become accustomed to in your spiritual life. There are people who have become accustomed to not pray, to not reading the Word of God, who are accustomed to not coming to church prepared to worship God. They're accustomed to that because they've done it that way for so long. That's sad. Now they've been a long time in that case. And dare any preacher come in and try to even suggest that they might be sick. Brother, we've done it this way all our lives. So did this man. For 38 years anyway.
38 years.
He became accustomed. Again, in this man, we see the spiritual life of many of God's people. They become accustomed to being spiritually weak. They're accustomed to it. They become accustomed to failing spiritual health. They have forgotten what it is like not to be spiritually disabled. They've been spiritually disabled so long they have forgotten what it's like to be healthy. They become accustomed. They become accustomed to spiritual decay. There's spiritual rot all around them, and they're accustomed to it. The stench of rot is all around them, and they're accustomed to it. This is sad. They have forgotten what it's like to be free from fear, to be free from worry. They have forgotten what it's like to live with, not to live with the guilt of unconfessed sin. They have forgotten what it's like to be spiritually healthy. They have forgotten what it's like to have spiritual vigor. They have forgotten what it's like to have a song in their heart. Be careful what you become accustomed to. Dangerous. Somewhere along the line, this man, I'm sure, became accustomed to the life of a crippled. Secondly, this man's mindset was one of self-pity. In his reply to a yes or no question, he tells how unfortunate he is. If you ask someone a yes or no question and they summarize their life, that tells you what's on their mind. And that's what this man did. Yes or no question, and he proceeds to tell how unfortunate he's been. He proceeds to list his troubles. First thing he says is, "Sir, I have no man." Jesus didn't ask him, "Do you have someone to help you?" That wasn't the question. The question was, "Do you want to be made whole?" "Sir, I have no man when the water is troubled to put me in the pool." What do you think he was focused upon? He had no man. He had no man. When the water is troubled, I don't have anybody to put me into the pool. I have nobody. Sir, I have nobody. I have nobody who cares for me. And yet, while he was speaking those words, there was somebody standing right before him who could bring healing to his life. And he didn't know a thing about it. He is absolutely blind to who it is and what is standing right before him. Because he's so caught up in, sir, I have no man. Notice he went on to say, but while I am coming, another steppeth down before me. What's he saying? He's saying, sir, things just haven't worked out for me. They just haven't worked out for me. I've been unlucky. I can't catch a break anywhere. How many times, we don't believe in luck, but how many times you hear people say, if it weren't for bad luck, I wouldn't have any luck at all. Oh, you poor thing. That's basically what this man was saying. Things just haven't worked out. What's he consumed with? What's he focused upon? The question was a yes or no question. He's consumed with what he sees as his misfortune. I have no man. And the times that I have tried, someone else steps in front of me. I believe we see here a mindset of self-pity. I'll tell you something right now. If you are failing spiritually, if you are spiritually feeble, if you are spiritually disabled, it's very easy to fall into the mindset of self-pity. But you'll never get better in that mindset. Never. You'll only get worse. Thirdly, this man's mindset reveals that he viewed himself as a victim. It goes along with self-pity. I have no man when the water is troubled to put me into the pool. But while I am coming, another steppeth down before me. What's he saying? First of all, Jesus asked him a simple yes or no question that he did not answer. But what's the man saying? He's saying, sir, it's not my fault because I don't have anybody. And every time that I try to get into that pool, somebody else gets in the way. It's not my fault. It's not my fault. I have been this way for 38 years. But Lord, let me tell you why. Let me tell you why I have been this way. It's because I don't have anybody. It's because every time I try to get in the pool, somebody gets in the way. Lord knows I've tried. But I've been a victim. I've been a victim. I can't be healed. This is just the way it is. I have no man. That's just the way it is. Every time I try to step in the pool, somebody else gets there before me. That's just the way it is. It's not my fault. He's basically saying, Lord, if I had somebody, my life would be different. Lord, if these people would quit stepping in front of me, my life would be different. That's what he's basically saying. Which is another way of saying, it's not my fault. It's not my fault. In his mind, there is something or somebody to be blamed for him still being in the condition that he was in. You'll never get better that way. He views himself as a victim. He's a victim of the acts and behaviors of others. I have no man, and every time I try to get in the pool, somebody else rudely steps in front of me. I am a victim of the acts and behaviors of others. In his mind, things just have not been fair. And there are many of God's people today that are in terrible spiritual shape, but in their minds, they're victims. It's not their fault. Now, don't misunderstand me. There are victims. There are victims. A victim is an injured party, the recipient of a wrong. And there are true victims today in our society. People who've been robbed, they're victims. People who have been abused or raped, they're victims. So there is such a thing as a victim. But being a victim and taking on victim status are two entirely different things. Those who take on victim status feels that because whatever it was that happened to them, they are now no longer responsible or accountable for their life. And that's just not true. Whatever it is that has happened to you, you are still accountable. And you are still responsible for your life. Make no mistake about it. If you're in a poor spiritual condition, you are responsible. Well, you don't know what the people at that church did to me. You are responsible. If you are in a poor spiritual condition, you are responsible. Yes, you might be a victim. I doubt it, but you might be a victim. But don't take on victim status. You are responsible. And you are accountable. Many will use their victimization as an excuse for their lives. But make no mistake about it, if you are in poor spiritual condition, there are no excuses. You have no excuse for being in a poor spiritual condition. Those who take on victim status feel that they are entitled to self-pity. I have a right to feel sorry for myself. After all, this happened to me. They are entitled to self-pity, so they feel. They are not accountable in their minds for living lives of defeat, for living lives of failure. That is a very destructive mindset. It is not only destructive, it's addictive. Pretty soon, that's the only way you'll be thinking. It's a very dangerous mindset. This man's mindset was one of hopelessness. His response, "I have no man when the water is troubled to put me into the pool, but while I'm coming, another steppeth down before me." These words say, what's the use? I've tried. What's the use? I prayed. I prayed once for a half hour. Nothing happened. What's the use? Have you prayed all day? And even if you have and nothing happened, pray all day again. People take on very quickly today. Doesn't happen in 3 minutes. What's the use? And then they have the audacity to say, I tried. No, you didn't. But this man has this attitude. What's the use? I've lost all hope. That last person that stepped in front of me, that was the final straw. What's the use? Be careful of having a final straw. That's dangerous. Year after year, this man perhaps had seen his hopes and dreams shattered as another person stepped in front of him into the healing waters. The fact that he used the verb coming is in the present tense and indicates continuous action. It appears that he was continually trying to get into that pool, but somebody always got in the way. Somebody always stepped in front of him. So he would be saying, I have tried over and over and over again, and it never works. Never works. So what's the use? So here's a man whose thinking is entirely swayed by circumstances. That's spiritually unhealthy. That is the result of spiritual disease. Fifthly, this man's mindset was directed and controlled by the wrong things. I want to look at three things. In his response, we see three things that his mind was definitely focused upon. First of all, he was focused upon the past. I have no man is in the present, it's also in the past. But every time I go to that pool, someone has stepped in front of me. Year after year, perhaps he's been shoved aside, neglected by those who could have perhaps helped him, and he focused upon that. You focus upon the acts and behavior of others, you will be physically, spiritually diseased. And you stay there long enough, you will be spiritually unable. You will be spiritually unable. He focused upon being neglected. He focused upon the actions of others. Again, those words, no man. Again, those words, another steppeth down before me. Note, in both of those statements, it's somebody else. It's somebody else. It's not him. It's somebody else. He focused upon what happened to him. He focused upon what happened to him in the past. He's focused upon his disappointments. Beware of that mindset. Beware of that. Secondly, he was focused upon what he perceived to be the problem. What he perceived to be the problem was twofold. Number one, I have no man. He saw that as a problem. Number two, whenever the water is stirred and I try to get into the pool, somebody steps in front of me. So in this man's mind, he has a twofold problem. Nobody will help me. And somebody's always getting in the way. He states what he... Again, the Lord asked him a yes or no question. And he stated what he perceived to be the problem. And in all reality, this was not the problem. This was not the problem. The problem, the real problem, was not that he had no man. The real problem was not that another steppeth down before me. You know what the real problem was? His condition. 38 years, a crippled. Sounds to me that that's the real problem. The real problem is not I have no man. The real problem is not people are always getting in my way. The real problem is his condition. And so it is with God's people. The real problem is our spiritual condition. And it's usually the last thing that people see, if they ever see it. And that's the real problem. But if you don't even know what the real problem is, you do not possibly know what the solution is. And this man misidentified the real problem, and he saw the only solution was people had to get out of his way. Somebody had to help him. After all, he's not responsible. Beware of the mindset of misidentifying the real problem. The first place we ought to look anytime there is a problem is ourselves. And I guarantee you, you will see a problem every time you look there. He was also focused upon a physical solution. He's focused upon that pool. One time his thought process was, if I could only get into that pool. If I could only get into that pool, all my problems would be solved. A lot of people think that way. Oh, if this would happen, all my problems would be solved. If I could get it, go to a different school, if I could get a different job, if I could be married to a different, the list is endless. All my problems would go away. No, they won't. My life would be so much better. I'll tell you what will make your life better. Get spiritually right. Stay spiritually healthy. I guarantee you, your life will be better. Guaranteed. If I only had someone to put me into that pool, and only if people would quit stepping in front of me. People are so rude. They're always stepping in front of me. Don't they know that I have needs? Why do they do that to me? There's that self-pity. But if I could just get into that pool, my life would be better. So there he sits, or there he lies, at the side of the pool, waiting and waiting and waiting. And day after day, nothing changes. Because in reality, he's focused upon the wrong solution. And he spends his life focused upon that pool. How sad when God's people misidentify the real problem, and as a result are focused upon the wrong solution, a physical solution to a spiritual problem. Spiritual problems have spiritual solutions, not physical solutions. Yet people are always looking for a physical solution to a spiritual problem. It doesn't work that way. It doesn't work that way. So oh, how the sad and pitiful spiritual condition that you and I can find ourselves in, and how easy it is for our thinking to be twisted. These are real dangers. It's a real danger that we can fall into such a condition. It's a real danger that we can be in that condition for a long time. It's a real danger that we begin to think wrong. Because I guarantee you, you begin to think wrong, you'll stay in that condition. But in the passage, we are reminded of how great is the mercy and the compassion of Christ. Christ came to where this man was. And as we said this morning, when he did, he had everything this man needed. Jesus came where this man was. And he came with a message. He came with a message of healing. And the Lord always comes with a message. With a message of healing. If you're spiritually sick, I believe every day the Lord comes to you with a message of healing. And many are so spiritually sick, they don't even hear it. They don't even see it. But he came to this man, and he told him to do three things that he could not do in his own strength. Three things. He told him to rise. Told him to pick up his bed. And he told him to walk. That's the message of healing. In order to do those things, this man would have had to put his trust in Jesus Christ. We see the result of it all in verse 9. His way of living had been changed. He obeyed the message. He obeyed what Christ said. And again, to do so, he had to put his trust in the Lord. I'll tell you what it's going to take for a lot of people to get spiritually healthy. Every crutch that they have in their life needs to be swept from under them. Every single crutch taken away. Where the only one they can look to is the Lord. The Lord can do that. The Lord can do that. And perhaps we need to be praying in that vein. Lord, take away all their crutches. Take away all my crutches. And cause me to lean upon you, depend upon you. His life was now filled with joy. There in verse 9 it says that he walked. He walked. And as we said this morning, I believe he did so with great joy. We see in verse 11 that he's now focused on something entirely different. When Jesus asked him, "Wilt thou be made whole?" "I have no man." And every time I try to get in the pool, someone steps in front of me. But when the Jews said, "It is the Sabbath day, it's not lawful for thee to carry thy bed," in verse 10, he answered them, "He." Notice his response did not begin with "I." That was his response. That's where his response began when Jesus said, "Wilt thou be made whole?" He said what? "I." But notice now, his response doesn't begin with "I." It begins with "He." Him. His focus is entirely different. "He that made me whole." Where's his focus? On the one who made him whole. He was now determined to do what Christ said. He goes on in verse 11, and he says, "He that made me whole, the same said unto me, take up thy bed and walk." What he's saying is, y'all, it might be against the law to walk on the Sabbath day, but it just seems reasonable to me when the one who made me whole of a disease that I had for 38 years, and he told me to walk, it just seemed reasonable to me to walk. That makes good sense. The Lord tells you to do something, the one that saved your soul, it just makes good sense to do what he says. And that's basically what he's saying here. "He that made me whole said I could walk, and therefore I'm walking." His life was now a life of worship. Verse 14, afterward Jesus findeth him in the temple. He's worshiping. His whole life's changed. He's no longer in that multitude. Why hang around there? He's in the temple. He's worshiping. But notice also, Jesus revealed himself. In verse 15, the man departed and told the Jews it was Jesus, which made him whole. He now has a courage that he didn't have before. He said, "It was Jesus that made me whole." You see, he sees the real solution to the real problem. And the solution is always the Lord. It's always the Lord. The solution is always to draw closer to the Lord. "Well, I have no man. No one will help me." Draw closer to the Lord. "Everybody keeps getting in my way. They don't treat me right. I'm a victim." Just keep drawing closer to the Lord. No matter what happens, you trust the Lord. And your life will be better. I'm not saying you won't have problems. Your life will be better. Your thinking will be better. Just trust the Lord. You know, that's a platitude that's thrown out there all the time. But it's true. Trust the Lord. But it's sad. I have observed through the years many people, and it could be because they're lost, but I'm going to assume they're saved. They have absolutely no ability, nor do they know anything about trusting the Lord. They don't know a thing about it. They've never done it. They've never done it. That's sad. That ought to be our life, trusting the Lord. The truth is, if we just trusted the Lord, we wouldn't get the spiritual disease. We wouldn't get half the spiritual diseases we get. If we just trusted the Lord. That's the solution. That's the solution. Trust the Lord. I don't tell anybody. It'll be all right. Not if you don't get right, it won't. Trust the Lord. Trust the Lord. You trust the Lord, it'll be all right. May not turn out like you want, but it'll be all right. You trust the Lord. This man serves as a warning. The condition that we can get in serves as a warning, as the mindset that we can get in. It also serves as a great encouragement, the mercy and the compassion of Jesus Christ, that He still, even after 38 years, would come to us with a message of healing. And how often God's people, there they are, spiritually diseased, day after day after day, week and week after week, month and month after month, year and year after year. And Jesus still comes every day with a message of healing. Won't you listen? Won't you just listen to the Lord as He speaks? And just do it. His way. His way works. We should know by now that ours doesn't. His way works. Listen. Listen to what He has to say. Don't get mad. Don't get angry. Why would you get angry at somebody who comes to you with a method of healing? Why, I don't understand. Why would that make you angry? That doesn't make sense. That just shows how sick we are. That we're going to get mad at the person who's telling us how to get better. I mean, if that's your condition, you're truly a sick individual. But there's hope. There's hope in the Lord. And that's the only hope that you and I have. And I'm glad for that. I'm glad. I don't have to go and look under every rock. I don't have to go and look, go miles and miles and miles, or go to this church and that church and this church and that. I don't have to do that. The Lord is the solution. Trust Him. Trust Him. And you tell people at that, oh, He doesn't care. He doesn't care a thing about you. All He can say is trust the Lord. What would you rather than say? Go down to Catholic Church? You might find help there. Go talk to your lost friends that are in the same condition or worse than you. Hang out with them for a while. You won't get better doing that. Trust the Lord. That's the answer. That's the answer. And every time we get angry at that solution, it just shows. It shows one of two things. Either we're lost, as can be, or we're sick, as can possibly be. God help us. Trust the Lord. Don't let you come and listen to this song.